And now, you're tuned in to RBLR, the home of Tampa Bay's Reveler Sports.
This is your RBLR Rays podcast. I'm your host, Zach Dobble, and my co-host, Pat Davenport. Pat, how you doing?
Chilly. It's cold. It's so cold in the UK. And in fact, we got hit by a storm this past weekend. We got hit by Storm Dara. Because they always got to name it something. And it's always never like Death Storm 3000. It's always got to be some bloke from Ireland's name. Yeah. we got hit by Storm Dara, which we got hit like by like 90 mile per hour winds in some parts of the country, which is, you know, I'm sure you guys know all about that and worse, but we were like, oh, it turns out we can have extreme weather sometimes too. And it's not been great. But other than that, I've been pretty good. How have you been?
I have been good. It is also getting cold here in South Carolina. And it's in the weird part of the year where it's like cold in the morning. Like when you get up, so like if you get up and you go out, you have like a jacket on. By the time it gets to like noon, it's like 70 degrees and sunny. So then you're hot. So then you're taking your jacket back off. But then when the sun goes down, then it's cold again. So you put the jacket back on and you can't wear a sweater because you're going to need to de-layer. So you got to wear a jacket. It's an inconvenient time of year from a temperature perspective.
These are the struggles that we go through here in kind of moderate climates. this is bad as it gets, folks. We got to layer and de-layer in the same day.
And de-layer instead of wearing like 17 layers like some people have to do, or wearing no layers if you're in a really, really warm climate. But we're grateful for our climate, and we're grateful for all of you that are watching with us today. We appreciate you. If this is your first time coming and watching us, thank you for joining us today. We're going to have a great show for you. We're going to talk about Danny Jansen. We signed a player. Crazy. And we're also going to talk about Yandy Diaz. Is he going to still be on the team? We don't know. If you want to know what's going to happen, stay tuned. And if you enjoyed the show, do us a huge favor. Subscribe. It helps us immensely. It's free to you. It just helps us out. Drop us a follow on the social media so you'll know when we're going live. If you want to know when we're going live, which you should, because we're always talking about the most breaking news. And we're giving you previews of what's going to happen next year and what happened in the year before. So we're going to have a great show for you guys. Thank you all for joining us. We're going to start out with the big news that was – pretty unexpected. I mean, I think that we thought maybe something would happen. This one I did not see coming.
No, that's right. Gary Sanchez to the Orioles. No, I'm joking. Gary Sanchez to the
Which
Orioles.
Which also is weird, but we can talk
about the Orioles. Yeah, it's also weird.
Orioles making weird moves. I don't really understand what the Orioles are doing at all. It's very confusing.
Yeah, but the second... That was the second most important catcher going to the AL East news of the week. The first most was that we signed former Blue Jay and Red Sox Danny Jansen to a one-year, $8 million deal with a mutual option for a second year at $12 million or a $500,000 buyout. Let's be honest, that's a one-year deal. Unless something crazy happens, that's a one-year deal for $8.5 million is probably what it's going to look like. Danny Jansen, probably going to get the shot to be the starting catcher for the Rays to come out of the year, come out of spring training. Him and Rotvet, I guess, are the current platoon back there. He is a righty hitter, so he platoons with Rotvet pretty good. He's coming off a pretty down year, all things considered, only hitting to an 89 WRC plus, only half a Fangraphs WAR, and is kind of got a reputation for being one of the better hitting catchers out there. So the fact that he underperformed at the plate is a bit of an alarm bell. But in the 3 years prior to that, he was an above average hitter, 115 WRC plus in 2023, and more importantly, in 2022, a 141 WRC plus, which is huge for a catcher. Even put up 2.7 Fangraphs WAR. He doesn't really have a reputation for being that great of a defensive catcher. Obviously, we can't quantify game calling that much, and I guess that will kind of come out more when we get to see him more. But in terms of his blocking, he's very, very good. In fact, Savant rates him as the best blocker in baseball, 100th percentile. He makes 14 blocks above average, but he doesn't have a good arm. He's a below average at catching people to steal, and he's not a good framer rated by Fangraphs either. So he can only really do one thing, which is block behind the plate, but he can hit in theory, unless we've now caught him on the back end of an aging curve going into his age 30 season. It's an interesting signing, to say the least. Jansen was one of the more high profile free agent catches on the market. So for the Rays to go out and spend, you know, 10% of their payroll on him is a big deal. I'd like to hear your opinion on it first, Zach.
Yeah, I think one of the things that is the other thing to throw into this discussion about Danny Jansen is, in addition to him having a bad year last year, the other thing that we can look at, besides the fact that he's been pretty good at hitting and pretty bad at defense, is he's been pretty bad at staying on the field. And when you look at his games played over the last several years, he'll only broken 90 games played once. And some of that is because he tends to platoon, because he's definitely, you know, he's a right-handed guy. You see some platooning happening there. However, not playing a lot of games is kind of something we have a problem with for a lot of our guys. And that's something that, I mean, not a lot. We have a few guys that have injury issues, and those tend to be, you know, guys that we look for a lot of value from, but they've had some injury issues in the past. So to add another guy that's a bat first type of guy that has injury issues kind of feels strange. But you can see why the move was made when you look at the, you know, the ineptness offensively at the catcher position last year. So from it's interesting, we were kind of talking about this before we hopped on. It feels like a very un-Rays move. It feels like the kind of move that you would say, man, they need to add some offense at catcher. That we would say that. And then we would say, let's just go add this guy who's got pretty good offensive stats. It feels very interesting. So there's a couple different, you know, angles you could take on this. The one that we've been kind of discussing the most, outside of just, hey, adding some offensive value from a catching perspective, is this just a stopgap to then be flipped at the trade deadline? Because if he decides to have a nice season and hits to like a 120 WRC plus, you could probably get a nice package for him at the trade deadline if some of the guys that we hope will make improvements at the minor league level are now ready to come up, you know, middle of the way through the season. If some of those guys are ready, then maybe you just flip him for whatever you can get for him and bring up a young guy. So there's a couple different angles to take on this. I think the other element to this is the payroll element to it. He's going to be making $8.5 million with the Rays, which seems like a lot because currently that's like 10% of their payroll. So I guess the question that I'd ask you is, do you think this is a sign that the Rays are going to start spending more, or is this a one-off, we needed to fill a role here, we just decided this was our guy type of move?
Yeah, I guess that's a really tough question to answer because the Rays' payroll is still low-ish compared to the rest of the league, for sure. You'd reckon that they could. I think the stadium situation and the loss of revenue from that will limit their spending capabilities, in theory. I think there's still definite moves that need to be made with this roster, and there's additions that still need to be made to this roster. Whether that comes from the free agent pool, I am doubtful. I think if we're going to add guys, it's probably going to be for a trade. I don't think we're going to be going signing people to crazy extensions or putting a $700 million bid in for Juan Soto or anything like that. So I think it was just a case of maybe they couldn't seem to find any matches that they like in terms of trade partners for catcher, because catcher was a need that Eric Neander and the front office made clear that they wanted to address this offseason. And I guess this is just a quick plug and play, and I would say low risk signing, because it's one year. If it goes wrong, oh well, he's off the books next year. So I think Jansen himself saw this as an opportunity to get some playing time a la Ahmed Rosario off a down year, and said, I will use this to rebuild my value. If I'm doing great and the Rays are doing bad, then they'll trade me off to a contender and I'll do great. And if the Rays are doing good and I'm doing good, then maybe we'll go win something. And if we're both doing bad, then we'll call it quits next year and we'll move on. It's like there's no real disastrous scenario here. So I think it's a nice partnership for both teams. But yeah, it does feel very un-Rays-like. Like you said, considering that the Rays seem to have pretty much always valued defense game calling first when it from their catches, and kind of said, we don't care what he hits as long as he's a good defensive catcher. Alex Jackson getting as long of a leash as he did is a good example of that. But, you know, they fielded Jose Molina out there for 4 years, who was also, you know, right down there in the doldrums batting wise, but they loved his hitting, so his fielding so much that they do it. So to go after a bat first catcher does feel on Rays like. Do you think that this is a change in philosophy for the Rays at all?
I don't necessarily think so, especially because the future at the catching position is already available in the minor season. He played at Double A last year, Dominic Keegan. He's currently, like, when you look, if you look at any prospect site, they're going to say he's a 2025 guy. It's interesting that they, it's interesting to see them add a guy when they, it seems like they have a catcher with a 2025 trajectory. I would say the trajectory is back half of 2025 for sure. It really seems like this is a stopgap. And it's almost like hedging your bets a little bit in the event that for some reason Keegan stalls a little bit, and especially because they're both righties. So it seems like they're kind of hedging their bets a little bit, saying, hey, we're gonna wait and see, you know, if Keegan's ready, we have a pretty easy out. We don't feel like we've, you know, invested too much in him because it's just a 1 year deal. And it's easy to just move Keegan back up. And I think he could absolutely get traded if Keegan's ready to go. I don't think it's a change in philosophy for them. I think that they, you know, they want to add offense because I think they can see, as we can see, that offense was a problem for them last year. So it makes sense to me, at least, if you're going to say, I need a stopgap catcher for 3 months, right, to fill a role on the team until we have Dominic Keegan ready to go, right? It would make sense to me to say, let's let that stopgap be an offensive stopgap, because it's clear that that's the big need for the team. So if we're going to bring in a stopgap, let's not exacerbate the problem more and bring in another defensive first guy, because we tried that and like that didn't work. And if we're just talking about a short-term stopgap, we might as well bring in somebody who provides some offensive value, because that's a need for the team. I don't think that they're changing their philosophy. I just think they're saying in this 3 month, half a season period where we're waiting for Keegan to be ready to play at the major league level, we've decided instead of going with a guy that is going to be defense first, we're going to go with a guy that's some offense first to potentially inject a little bit more offense into the lineup in the at-bats that he gets, as opposed, and they're willing to take the negative of his framing and his defense in exchange for a little bit more offense, because they don't, it's not a long-term commitment to that. And we don't even know how many starts he's going to get. I mean, Rortvedt, you know, it's all to play for as far as who's going to be starting. I think the starting catcher, I think that there's a really good chance that Rortvedt still starts. And I don't think that he's great either, but again, neither of these guys are the long-term solution for the Rays at catcher. The long-term solution for the Rays at catcher is probably going to start the year at AAA, and we'll see what happens from there. So I don't think this is a philosophy shift. I think this is a isolated, we looked at our situation for these three, you know, 2 to 3 months, and we said we'd rather add offense than add more defense. And that's just the decision they made.
Yeah, I think so. I think we don't need to overcomplicate it. Yeah. When it's a 1 year deal, I mean, even on his down year, Jansen pretty much had a better year than Rays catching combined last year. Yeah. For a bit of comparison, the Rays from catcher put up a 67 WRC plus last year. Danny Jansen on this down year put up an 89.
Yeah.
Danny Jansen had a higher walk percentage than the Rays catchers combined on his down year, a lower strikeout percentage than Rays catchers combined. They both hit nine, Rays catchers combined hit nine home runs from the catcher position last year. Danny Jansen on his down year hit nine home runs last year by himself in, yeah, what was it, 70 games. So he will, at worst, make one of the lineup spots way more consistent. And yeah, the fielding is not going to be as good, but that's what Rortvedt or Driscoll is going to be for. I think we got to remember Logan Driscoll is still going to be in contention for a catcher spot as well.
Yes.
And let's be honest, like you said, really good point that I didn't even consider. Jansen, not the greatest at staying on the field. So there may come a point where this kind of three-way battle for catcher solves itself.
Yeah.
one of the three may get hurt. And then Dominic Keegan, like you said, I think you're right, is the future. He'll likely start the year in AAA. We'll probably get a good few reps in spring, though.
Yeah, and, he will. Absolutely, he will.
Yeah, and then from there, we'll see how close he is to the majors. I doubt he'll be up before the break, before the All-Star break. So if you can have a guy that can just like steady Eddie his way through for half a season, that's fine. It's quite expensive, like you said, for Rays standards to steady Eddie your way through a position. But honestly, let's not overcomplicate it. They need offense. This was an easy source of place to improve the offense. And he's a stopgap.
Which yeah, I mean,
raises the floor of the team.
Yeah, and I think that's a really good point. Just really, really simple question. Is the team better or worse after this signing?
Better. I think I don't think he's a particular, like, best case scenario, he goes back to being a 120 WRC plus hitter with so-so right. defense. That raises the floor of the team and the ceiling of the team.
Yeah. And I think that that's a, and again, I think that's a really easy way to look at it too, is just, is the team better or worse? Team's better. They've got more offense now than they had before. Does this, you know, is this really going to move the needle? Like in terms of whether this team can, you know, compete for the AL East or not? No, but it, just on the margins, this makes the team better. I think the interesting conversation, and I think it's one we can't really answer this question, is this a sign of things to come from a spending perspective? We talked about that earlier. Is this a sign of things to come from a spending perspective, that they're going to be spending more? Eric Neander made a statement, because it was something that I think we both had thought, was that because of the stadium drama, they're going to spend less. And again, you can take what Eric Neander says with a grain of salt if you want. But in the latest Tampa Bay Times article, Topper had a quote from Neander saying, "We are not nothing that's happening on the outside is affecting the way that our baseball operations are running," which is, you know, you can take that for what you will, but at least publicly, the Rays are saying, we're not going to adjust the way we do business because of what's going on the outside. We're going to keep doing things the way we do things. And, you know, could they decide that they want to spend more? They could. There's always been that option for them to spend more. They just haven't taken it. So maybe, is this a year that they decide to do that? I have no idea, but it is interesting that this is the first major move the Rays have made. And it is something that we would not have expected, almost exclusively because of the dollar attached to it.
Yeah. But I guess to kind of prove the dollars are like not actually that much of an overpay, Gary Sanchez got the same amount of money. Do you think Gary Sanchez is a better or worse? Like if we got the choice for the same amount of money, would you rather have Gary Sanchez or Danny Jansen?
I mean,
it's the same amount of money.
And again, I haven't looked at Gary Sanchez's numbers. My like cursory brain tells me that Gary Sanchez is a better defensive catcher with some pop on the upside. And I don't believe he has an injury history off the top of my head, which, you know, however, there's a lot of weird baggage with Gary Sanchez that, and plus he played for the Yankees, which makes me not as attracted to him. I think it's about a wash. I think it's very weird that the Orioles got him because they have the catcher. So it seems very odd that they went out and spent money on a catcher when their real need is pitching. That's a very strange decision that they've made to not spend. They spent a bunch of money on their offense, which I don't think was the problem for them and won't be the problem for them going forward. And it's not an Orioles pod, but I'm very confused by their moves. I think that it's about a wash. I would probably say Gary Sanchez is better than Danny Jansen if you asked me. Gun to my head.
Okay.
I'm not looking at their numbers, so I don't know.
A very cursory glance at their numbers. So Jansen put up half an FWAR last year, 0.5, and Gary Sanchez put up 0.3 FWAR with the Brewers last year. Again, but Gary Sanchez hit to a 96 WRC plus compared to Jansen's 89. So slightly better hitter, but less FWAR, so a worse defender by Fangraph's logic. Gary Sanchez cannot block the ball very well. Is better. He's like exactly average catching people stealing.
Yeah.
And is about the same at framing as Danny Jansen. So he's Sanchez has more arm.
He's also older than Jansen too, right?
Yeah. And like, again, we talk about Gary Sanchez's offensive ceiling. He hasn't had, so since 2018, he's he's played 6 years since 2018. Only three of those years he's had a WRC plus above 100.
Yeah.
So it's a bit of a, I feel like Jansen's a bit more of a steady hand than Gary Sanchez.
Yeah. I mean, I said everything I said without looking at their numbers. So I'm 100% willing to agree with you on that.
Yeah, but I'd say pretty close to it. I think they deserve to earn probably around the same amount of money.
I don't think the Rays overpaid Danny Jansen. I don't think that at all. I think it's just the money is weird, because I think the money is about right. I think what you're saying is true. They're Jansen maybe even a little bit better. So the money itself, I think, is pretty fair. Like, we're just talking about value. I think value is about right.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's about market value, which the Rays love to do. They love to do market value.
Yeah.
Or better. So they got market value, I would say. Yeah. So yeah, I would like, if we had to like grade this signing, I don't think we could like overcomplicate it. I would give it like a C plus, a B minus.
Like B minus, yeah.
Yeah. Does the job. I saw Matt Germain's post about Jansen's amazing blocking numbers. He is a good blocker. He's in fact potentially the best blocker in the biz, but it's just the rest of his game defensively where the concerns come.
And when you think about like what, if you're going to rank like the importance of blocking relative to the other skills, you might say that a catcher we need to have, like catching runners, stealing, framing, calling a game, blocking is probably farther down, because blocking only really comes into play when a pitcher has missed his spot, which with the high stuff, you know, potential of some of our guys definitely does come into play more often than maybe some other organizations, because there's a lot of high stuff there. So that it does, it's not nothing, but I think it ranks, it's a good point and it is a strength of his, but I don't know that the value of that is greater than a value of somebody who's better at calling a game or throwing runners out. And it'll be interesting to see. I think, you know, if Danny Jansen was a young guy who was going to be like coming up, you know, in the future, and we're saying, hey, maybe ABS is going to come. I don't know. Maybe blocking becomes more important, because now the actual, like, you know, the actual framing is less important, and you're going to get guys that maybe are trying to get creative with hitting the zone, but maybe having some wild trajectories, and maybe, you know, I don't know, like maybe blocking becomes more important sometime in the future, but I don't know that it really makes a huge difference for 2025, but it is a good point that he's an excellent blocker.
He is an excellent blocker. And I think it's important that Rays fans get excited, simply because we're going to see Danny Jansen as like the exact opposite of the catchers we have seen previously, which is Rene Pinto, awful blocker, right? Like, I don't think he ever played enough games to get like baseball savant percentage numbers, but like the eye test said he was an awful blocker. And now we're going to see the best blocker. But Rene Pinto and Ben Rovett are really good at catching people stealing.
Mm-hmm.
Danny Jansen is not good at that at all.
Yeah.
If you could pick the most effective catcher of the Rays over the last 5 years, who would it be?
Excellent question.
Yeah, Mike Zunino.
Not even a question. Yeah.
I think it's a great question. But it's Mike Zunino is the easy answer. I don't think it's close.
Well, I'll say that I am biased because go Gators. So I'm biased for that one. He was a Gator, but I mean, he is, I think he's everything the Rays could want from a catcher. He was an elite, elite defender, an excellent game caller. He worked very well with all of the Rays pitching staff. And for like a brief moment, he was like an elite power guy as well, because he does have elite power. It was just a question of if he could make enough contact to make it matter. And for one beautiful moment, he did make enough contact for it to matter. And he had a phenomenal season. And I think, and since Mike Zunino, I feel like I've been chasing the high of that season from a catcher from the Rays. I don't know if we'll ever get a season like that again. Because he's just such a unique combination of skills where like, he's almost like if you took the sliders up on like three of his statistics, like all the way up, but then like, dude was slow as dirt. Dude struck out a bunch. Dude did not walk. Dude did not make enough contact. But when he made contact, he would just eviscerate baseballs. So he was incredibly fun to watch. And as a former Gator, I personally really enjoyed every at bat of his. I don't know if we'll ever get a guy like that again, but he's definitely the best Rays catcher. And I don't know, you know, I think that that's kind of like the Rays ideal catcher is what he was. Just unfortunate that he wasn't able to like sustain that level of production, which was definitely not, you know, it definitely wasn't sustainable, but it was sad that we didn't see more of it.
And you know what the fun thing about Zunino is?
What?
He's the same profile of can't block that well, really good at catching guys stealing, pretty good framer, excellent game caller. And then now we're just doing the exact opposite profile with Jansen.
Right.
And I guess, you know, the game calling has been good and the framing has been good. So it'll be interesting to see what the exact opposite type of catcher looks like, just to get an up close and personal look at that. And, you know, to watch as an entertainment product, variety is the spice of life. So it's good to see different profiles of catchers, because maybe, you know, the Rays are smart, but sometimes they'll get things wrong. And sometimes we'll see a different profile of catcher and we'll go, hey, maybe this is the new meta. You never know.
If you're looking at your wardrobe right now and you think it's not meta, I'm looking around at everybody around me and I'm not up to the meta. I'm not up to my standards that I want to be with my wardrobe. I have a very easy fix for you at shop.rblrsports.com, where you can go and get the best merch inspired by your favorite Tampa Bay sports teams. Rowdies, Bucks, Lightning, Rays, it's all there, all inspired by those teams. Go there if you want to up your game, get meta with your wardrobe. Shop.rblrsports.com. Use promo code FLAPPY, F-L-A-P-P-Y, for 10% off your entire order there. Promo code F-L-A-P-P-Y, shop.rblrsports.com.
Hey, you'll never need to switch that kind of profile up when you're wearing an RBLR tee. You'll just, yep. That's going to be you. Sign it to a 7-year, $182 million contract. If someone's willing to pay that for a t-shirt, hit us up. We know a guy.
We'll make you some great t-shirts. And if you're enjoying the show so far, if you want to pay us 7 years, $182 million, but you don't actually have that money, you can help us out in a different way. And that's by subscribing. If you're enjoying what you're seeing so far, subscribe. If you're enjoying the talk, if you want to hear more, we're about to go into our player review of Yandy Diaz. We're going to have more player reviews throughout the offseason. We're going to go down the top guys. We're going to have some combo shows where we do a couple of guys. So if you don't want to miss your favorite player, if it's not Yandy Diaz, getting player reviewed, make sure you follow us on social media and drop us a subscribe. Like the video if you're enjoying it. Let's get right into Yandy Diaz, the year in review for Yandy.
Yeah. So Yandy Diaz came into 2024 off a career best season when he was, you know, an all-star class player. In fact, he was an all-star and won the batting title, the first in Rays history.
Yes.
So expectations were, you know, clearly high for old Yandy Diaz. And I guess when the expectations are that high, it's hard to replicate that and to meet those expectations, because he didn't, to put it frankly, but he did put up a 120 WRC plus through a 281, 341, 414 slash line. He had an 8.1 walk percentage and ended up putting up 1.9 Fangraphs WAR, which is second only to Brandon Lau in terms of position players that finished on the Rays in 2024. So he was actually, I think this is worth noting as well, the only qualified batter on the Rays that finished with the Rays.
Yep, and that's one of the things that I think, if you're talking about value with Yandy Diaz, one of the things that I think puts him so high up there, if you're talking about how important he is to the organization, is when you look back since 2021, he has played at least 134 games every single year since 2021. And that is incredibly valuable on a team where we've got a lot of guys that have injury problems here and there, especially when you look at kind of his, it's easy to look at the, like his infield mate, Brandon Lau, as like a contrast where you have, you know, a lot of inconsistency with the amount of games he plays. Yandy Diaz provides that stability from a games perspective. So that's, you know, that's something that's, you know, it is quantifiable because the more games you play, the more WAR you can accrue. But I think that it's really great to have a guy like him on your team, because you know he's going to be there for your entire season, and he you're not going to have to worry about him missing games here and there.
Yeah, and you know, availability is so important with this Rays team, especially when it was a Rays team lacking in kind of veteran, experienced bats for large chunks of the season. Yandy, Randy, Lau were kind of expected to anchor that team, and Yandy was the only one that kind of stayed on the team for the whole year and didn't get hurt consistently, which is important. But I mean, going from a five-win player to essentially a two-win player, that's a big drop-off. And that, and we can't beat around the bush. He got off to a slow start. Him and Randy in particular were like the big culprits for the people that the Rays relied on to anchor their lineup when Brandon Lau was hurt at the start of the year. And he didn't come through. The rest of the year, he was actually kind of close to his production from 2022, 2023, when he was doing really well. But in the first month to 6 weeks of 2024, it was really rough for him, which led to that, which in part, not entirely, I really don't want to say entirely, but in part caused the Rays' slow start to the season, which again had that kind of domino ripple effect into them being out of it, or as close to being out of it as they were come the trade deadline, and felt like they should be sellers as opposed to buyers.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, he's an easy person to point the finger at because of the obvious drop off there. So I think it's important to kind of put some context as to what may have happened that resulted in that decrease in quality of play. And I think there's a couple of outside factors that I'm going to get into some of the numbers of what happened. But when we look at some of the outside factors that affected it, I think the obvious ones are the lack of lineup protection, because you lose Josh Lowe to begin the year. Brandon Lau was in and out of the lineup to begin the year. You obviously don't have number five available. He's just out. He's just gone. So now you're really – and Randy also is having a bad start to the year. So what does Yandy Diaz do in order to try to make up for the lack of all of those guys out there? He presses, and it shows up in the numbers, because the most glaring number when you look at what is a player – doing differently that is negatively affecting the performance. One of the first places I always go is O-swing, which is how often is he swinging at pitches outside of the zone? How often is he swinging at bad pitches? And he had a career high, which is not what you want. He had a 22% outside zone swing percentage is still pretty good. I mean, that's still not that bad at all, really. Like that's still a good, but it's a very marked increase for him. He was at a 19.2% last year, 3% increase. That's significant. And it was higher before. It's kind of stabilized towards the end of the year. He swung at some bad pitches, and he did that because he felt the need to bring some performance there to his team to try to bring them out of their doldrums. He was also swinging at pitches in the zone less. So if he was swinging at good pitches less, to the tune of about 1.5%, so not as drastic, but still there, swinging at bad pitches more, swinging at good pitches less, swinging more overall, and he's still making a good amount of contact. Like, his contact percentages were still good and where we'd like them to be, but when you're making contact on bad pitches, you're going to get bad results. And we saw that with his launch angle also going down in this last year. And I think that's a direct correlation to the fact that he was swinging at bad pitches. So you're looking at a guy that the hallmark of his game is his plate discipline. When that goes, and we see it also in his walk percentage going down by, what was it? He was at 8% this year. And that's a decrease of about 2% from previous years. And even really, it's an interesting trend for him, because 2022 was a 14% walk percentage. He sacrificed a little bit of walk percentage for some increased power and increased results with the bat. But then going again into this season, he sacrificed even more walk percentage, but did not, you know, replace that with value offensively, because he was making bad swing decisions because he was pressing. So that's kind of what happened. I guess the question, you know, I think that was probably boiling in Rays fans' minds, and I think it's in our minds too, is this going to be the Yandy of the future? Are we going to see this version of Yandy Diaz next year?
Well, I guess if we're diluting the problem to pressing, feeling the need to do more with the bat because of a lack of lineup protection, right now, that's still a problem. Right now, he doesn't have that much lineup protection. If Brandon Lau is healthy to begin the year and Josh Lowe can bounce back and Junior Caminero can take a step forward, that might not be a problem. But all of those things are very much ifs, not whens. Mm-hmm. There's no guarantee Josh Lowe is going to start the year hot. There's no guarantee Brandon Lau is going to stay healthy. And there's no guarantee Junior Caminero is immediately going to be the superstar we expect him to be as soon as we start 2025. They all could happen. And, you know, they're not like completely out of the question. But you've got to plan for all scenarios. And if we have the worst case scenario, which is Lau's unhealthy, Lowe's struggling or unhealthy, Caminero's struggling to find his way, then he's going to do the exact same thing, maybe.
Right.
And, you know, we always say, and this has been a discussion for like 5 years now with Yandy Diaz, where when he presses, he is very quick, prone to hit ground balls, right? And everyone goes, oh no, Yandy Diaz hits too many ground balls. Imagine if he hit the balls, because he still hit the ball really hard, even when he was struggling this year. But the problem is ground balls are way less likely to be hit than line drives or fly balls when hit hard, especially. So when he's chasing, he's going to hit more ground balls. It's just, that's how his swing works. Unless it's a really good pitch to hit, he's going to ground it. So can he press less? Sure. Is he capable of pressing less? Sure. Right now it's kind of a coin flip, I would say, and it depends on the circumstances around him. I would like to bet on Yandy being good next year. Will he win the batting title? Will he be a 167 WRC plus guy again? I don't think so. But could he get back to that 130, 140 range? Mm-hmm. Maybe, quite possibly. And I guess the question now is do you want to spend $10 million of your payroll on that chance, or would you rather cut $10 million and take a different kind of chance on someone like Jonathan Aranda?
I think it's a very interesting, it's a good question. I think that's the, you know, we've thrown a lot of questions out about Yandy. I think that is the question right now that is in every Rays fan's mind is, will he be on the team? And I think what has made that so interesting is what we just talked about with Danny Jansen. They just spent $8.5 million on Danny Jansen. So it would seem a little hypocritical and odd for them to trade Yandy now because he's cost too much, because he's objectively like way better than Danny Jansen in every respect, pretty much. And even his bad year is a 120 WRC plus. If he even bounces back a little bit, we're talking 130, 140 WRC plus. Most teams would kill to have that at their leadoff spot. So clearly the value is there. He is not going to be overpaid if he gets paid, you know, $10 million next year, because he's probably going to put up 2.5 to 3 or maybe more at 4, in which case he would be significantly underpaid if we assumed this as a $6 to $8 million valuation per win above replacement, which is kind of the number that we understand to be out there right now. I think he is being paid very fairly, if not being underpaid for the value he provides. The thing that complicates it is the logjam behind him with Aranda, with Mead. Caminero contributes to this. Then you got to talk about Trey Morgan. Then you got to talk about Xavier Isaac. When you look at the prospects that are in the Rays farm system, it kind of feels like they're all looking up at Yandy Diaz and Brandon Lau. Braden Taylor, it was going to eventually contribute to this as well. He's probably a 2026 prospect. He just got a big bump, which I don't necessarily know if he earned, but he just got a big bump in prospect rankings up to number 3 for the Rays. I don't understand how Trey Morgan is ranked number 10 for the Rays. It doesn't make any sense to me, but whatever. That's a conversation for another day. But anyway, all of those guys are all sitting there behind Yandy Diaz, and it all kind of comes under this question of, do we make room for him? I think the thing that makes it, that adds to the trickiness of this conversation, is the Rays' current system situation when it comes to the roster situation at the minors, which is that they have too many guys. They've got like I think they've got 184 guys right now on rosters, and they need to trim that down to 175. And that's, you know, if they do that, right? Let's say they do that and they trim it down. If you then trade Yandy for prospects, then you got to move more guys out of your organization to accommodate those new prospects. So what I think, if they trade him, which at the moment I'm going to say they're not going to, I think he provides too much value there. I don't know that, you know, it would have to be a perfect situation. They're going to listen all offseason. The buzz has been there listening on Yandy, Bilal, and Jeffrey Springs. That's been the buzz out there, as they're listening on those guys. All Rays fans who watch this show know that the Rays listen on everybody, so that's not a shock to anybody listening to this show. but they'll 100% still listen on Yandy. I don't think they're going to move him unless somebody's willing to offer a major league ready prospect or just a major league level player that's already at the majors that fills a position of need, like maybe the outfield, potentially, especially after they've moved off of Jose Siri. There's even more competition going on in the outfield. Maybe they want to make a move for a corner outfielder. I think if a team that needs a profile like Yandy and has an overflow with either prospects or talent at the outfield wants to make a move and wants to trade and make that kind of a trade, I could see that happening. I don't know immediately. I've done some kind of looking around. I don't see the trade partner right now. I just don't see it. I don't see the scenario. That doesn't mean one couldn't develop. That doesn't mean one couldn't happen over the course of the offseason. I just don't see it right now. I don't think this is a scenario where they're just going to dump him for a bunch of prospects, because I don't necessarily think that that makes sense given the current constraints on rosters and the current situation of the Rays farm system, which is already really, really good. I don't know that that really makes a lot of sense for them, because the farm system doesn't need help. It's not like we're like trying to rebuild the farm. The farm is already top three in baseball. So it doesn't, it's not an area of need for the Rays. An area of need for the Rays is offense. So trading away Yandy Diaz does not fix that problem. So I don't think that they're going to move him personally. I think this conversation gets a little bit more difficult if we get to the middle of the season. And let's say some of those younger guys are making a really strong case to be up at the major league level. That's it. I think we can have this conversation again at the trade deadline. I think there's a higher probability of him getting traded then, especially if he comes out and hits to a 140 WRC plus or something in the first half of the year. Then the conversation becomes a little more interesting when we get to the trade deadline. But I think he will be in spring training with the Rays. He will play the first half of the season, to be continued on what will happen at the trade deadline. But as of now, I think he starts the season with the Rays unless something dramatic is offered to them.
Yeah, I think I've gone to and fro on whether Yandy's going to be with the team next year, all off season. But I think I'm landing where you're landing, where he's too valuable to the team. And you could run around that, and I don't think it would be a disaster to run around out there, because he showed some real good stuff. But Trey Morgan and Xavier Isaac are still a year or two away, I would say 2026 at least.
I agree.
So they're not the answer there. And I don't think Yandy's going to be too valuable this offseason, purely just because the first base market is kind of bloated at the moment, free agent wise. So obviously, like, Alonso's the big fish, right? But then after that, if you don't want to go after Alonso, you could go after an aging Paul Goldschmidt. You could go after Anthony Rizzo. You could go after Josh Bell. You could go after Christian Walker. Ty France is a free agent. Joey Gallo is a free agent. Like, there's loads of first basemen on the market. Are any of them, like, I think Alonso's the only one that's like a lock to be better offensively than Yandy Diaz next year. And even then, who knows?
You could make the argument, like, it's definitely two different profiles of player, but you could make the argument that Alonso could provide more value, but it's definitely close.
Yeah, I wouldn't bank on Rizzo or Goldschmidt being better offensive presences than Yandy. Josh Bell, like, I love Josh Bell. I've been waiting for him to put up like an all-star year for ever, but he's not quite been able to do it. Christian Walker's coming off a hot year. He could be a guy that you could bet on, but apart from that, all these guys are big risks. So I guess if you are a team like the Diamondbacks, I suppose, you're watching Christian Walker walk away, you don't really have tons of money to spend on a big money free agent to replace him. Maybe you go after a Yandy Diaz. If you've got like some good outfielders, like an Alec Thomas, or I don't know, probably someone better than him. But like, I think the Diamondbacks have some outfield guys. But it's hard to see an overpay happening.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, I kind of feel like an overpay would be necessary. I think that it's interesting that you bring up the Diamondbacks, because you do have guys like Drew Jones who are there
that's
for them.
The one, Drew Jones, yeah.
That's the one, like, I would be interested in that. He's definitely still a ways off for being affecting the major leagues, but like, that's interesting to me. that is interesting to me. They also don't have, if you look at their system, they don't have a first baseman in waiting necessarily. They've got some corner guys that maybe could end up over there, and maybe some of the outfield guys end up playing at first at some point, but they don't have like a ready-made first baseman of the future there. But Yandy really is a first baseman of the future. He'd be a first baseman of right now, but he's not necessarily a first baseman of the future. So it's interesting. I think that, you know, there, it could happen. That's, you know, and you make a great point. There are guys out there. There are teams out there that could make that move. I just think it's unlikely, but it is.
Jake McCarthy. Happen. Jake McCarthy. That was the guy I was thinking of. Not Jake McCarthy. Alec Thomas hasn't been great.
So let me ask you this question. If the Diamondbacks come to the Rays and say, here's either Jake McCarthy or Drew Jones, and then somebody else for Yandy Diaz, what do you think the Rays do?
I think they take that.
You think they take that?
I think they do, because I think that's major league ready players in a position of need, that are under team control for a long time. I think that all works out. I don't think that offer will come in though.
Yeah, I don't think so either, because I think I would probably take that deal too. That's a really good deal, but I don't think that if Yandy was like 5 years younger, then probably wouldn't be having this conversation because they wouldn't want to get rid of him. And that would be, they might actually make that move because it would be adding up, you know, someone at a position of need for them that they don't have a ready-made solution for. And it could make sense, but because of his age, now I don't think he's going to necessarily fall off a cliff. I think his game, you know, it doesn't, you know, he doesn't rely on speed for his game at all. So I think he it does lend to him aging more gracefully than maybe some others, you know? So there's some potential for him to not just fall off a cliff. I think he could transition to a DH pretty well. Maybe not Nelson Cruz type power, but like that kind of consistent value for, you know, as he ages could absolutely be in the cards for him. But I don't know that they're going to trade, you know, a lot of young talent for that. And that's why I think this changes if you get the middle of the year and the Diamondbacks are sitting close to or in playoff contention and they see first baseman as a position of need and they get the idea, hey, we want to go for it this year. It's a different conversation at that point. If they say there's our position of need, we got to get a good first baseman. Here's some outfield prospects. We want this guy. That absolutely could happen. But I think you're 100% right because of the first baseman market and because of the value the Rays see Yandy Diaz in having. I don't expect him to get traded.
Yeah, 100% agree. I guess to round off this player review of Yandy, down year for Yandy. One that got better as it went on. He looked really good in October. What would you grade Yandy Diaz if you had to give him an end of year report? I do want to say of first basemen that put up at least 500 plate appearances this year, Yandy Diaz was sixth in WRC plus.
Yeah, I mean honestly, I mean it's. I want to say a solid B. I could be convinced on like a, I could honestly be convinced on a B plus or a B minus. I really could. Cause I think you could make the argument you just made that he's still a top 10 first baseman in baseball, which he is and give him a B plus. I think what hurts him is, you know, from my perspective is how well he had been playing the last 2 years to take a step back like that. I understand why it happened and it makes sense. It was just unfortunate to see that happen. And it kind of wraps up into a poor year for the Rays overall. So I'm going to say a solid B, but I wouldn't be mad if you said B plus, but I'm going to say B.
I'm also going to say B. I think it was a good year that looked worse because of the high standards we had for him. I think if this was his 2021 season, we'd be giving him a B plus. But because we've seen his 2022 and 2023 seasons, it's only a B. Punished by his own success.
Oh, yeah. We're definitely grading him on a curve because we've seen what he is capable of. I think if you switch the names out and we say this is like Aranda, we're throwing a party and we're ecstatic. But this is a guy that we know has potential to do better. So I think B is a really fair grade for him. But I think we'll get into player reviews. So stay tuned for that later in the offseason or previews, where we'll talk about what we think these guys will do this coming year. But the preview of the preview is I think he has a chance to bounce back with some of the guys that we talked about. There's a lot of what ifs of some of the guys around him, But I think some of those guys are a little bit less what if than others. We'll get into all of that as the offseason goes on and be very vague because we've got a lot of offseason to talk about all this stuff. But I think some of those guys could end up being that could end up turning out in a very positive way and providing some lineup protection. We'll see what happens. But I think he's gonna, I think if Yonny Diaz was listening in, he would like our preview talk of him a little bit more than the review talk of him, because it was an unfortunate, not a year up to his standards, but I think it'll be interesting to see what he does next year.
Yeah, I think he's one of the more bankable bats that the Rays have in their lineup for next year.
Yes,
I think
one of very few.
Yes, one of very few, both from a production and health standpoint.
Yes. Yeah. And you really can't understate the health standpoint when you look at the Rays. I mean, health is the best ability is availability. And I think that definitely shines brightly with Yonny Diaz.
Yeah. And the part of that is because the Rays are careful with him. They do DH him a lot now. He's not always at first base. They do DH him a lot. But yes, that's completely fine. I'd rather he DH sometimes and never went on the IL. That's a way better than playing first base 80 games a season and being on the IL the other half.
Yeah, absolutely. And so B year for Yonny Diaz. We'll see if he's still on the roster. We both think he will be, but we'll see what happens coming in next year. Before we go, I did want to briefly acknowledge the next step in the stadium nonsense. And we'll just briefly, just if you haven't seen it already, not Pinellas County. Oh my word. What's the word I'm looking for?
St. Petersburg.
They met their governing group met and agreed on the bonds. They approved the bonds again and have kicked it back over to Pinellas County now for a December 17th vote, which will be, let's see, I gotta think, that'll be Tuesday after next. So this next is coming, not this Tuesday, but the next Tuesday, the Pinellas County will vote again on the stadium. And it all happened kind of quickly because we kind of saw it on social media. Hey, they're going to vote on this tomorrow, just so you know. And we're like, oh, okay. And so they kicked it back over to the county. Interesting to know why they did that. Do maybe they feel like they've got the votes? Have there been some back channel conversations that they feel like the votes are there at the county level to get this taken care of? Will it be more stalling? Who knows? But just to say that we said it, that's the current step in the stadium saga that we're at right now. December 17th is the next date to watch.
Yeah. I went on record on saying I don't know if there's a way back for the Rays Stadium. They can't have went to a revote if they didn't think there was something different than the first time that they voted. Yeah. Like something must have changed for them to randomly announce a revote. Well, not randomly, but seemingly randomly.
Yeah.
But Pinellas County were the roadblock last time. They were always expected to be the toughest hurdle to climb over, which is annoying because it's the final hurdle you need to climb over to get everything going. So I guess we'll see on December 17th. I personally have no idea how this is going to go in terms of the vote, because I don't know how so many, like the amount of minds that needed to be changed got changed. But maybe it's like you said, that they just were like, hold on, we can't play hardball on this. They're seriously going to leave. We got to turn this around. Otherwise, we're going to look like a bunch of idiots for letting a Major League Baseball franchise walk away. I don't know if the Rays being completely hard-nosed on that is, and they no longer can call that bluff, or it's going to be more of the same. And they go, no, it's still no, go away. I really don't know. And I'm going to not pretend to know.
Yeah, there's not much we can speculate on. If you want to know what our thoughts are on the stadium, we won't elaborate it on too much here. Go back and watch some of our previous episodes. We've talked about this ad nauseum. Cliff Notes version, I think that there is just not enough stupidity in that group of people to sacrifice the revenue of an MLB franchise to not make this happen. There's not enough stupidity out there. I could be proven wrong on that. I do think it'll get worked out. I'm hopeful that this is the point at which they decide to be done with this and work it out and we get things back on track. But we'll find out on the 17th.
Yeah, we'll see you in a couple of weeks on that one, folks. Hopefully we don't have to talk about the stadium next week. I'd love a week off from that.
Yeah.
And then in 2 weeks we go, hey, the stadium's going to happen. We'll see shovels in the ground in January. And then we never have to talk about it until 2028.
Agreed. And we'll just be giving, we'll just give updates here and there. I'm like, oh, look, we had a new picture of how things are looking. And that'll be the conversation. Let's just manifest that into the universe. What I also really like to manifest is that you guys have enjoyed this show. I hope you have. We're always out here trying to give you guys the best Rays content out there. If you feel like you've been given a good show, if you want to appreciate, show us some appreciation for that, the biggest favor you could do for us is dropping a like on the video or on wherever social media you're watching this, or dropping a follow on any of our platforms. It's free. You might also be surprised as well. This happens frequently when it comes to YouTube or these other social media things, because if you like our stuff enough or if you see our stuff enough, it ends up in your feed. You might not actually be following. You might not actually be subscribed. So do us a huge favor if you've enjoyed the show. Drop us a follow and check to make sure if you think you're followed, if you think you're subscribed, just check real quick. You never know. You may realize, oh, wait, I'm not actually subscribed. I thought I was. And just hit the button. It helps us out so much. And it's free. It helps keep the show running. And we really, really appreciate you guys. That's going to be our show for this week. We're going to be back next week with more player reviews, hopefully no more stadium talk. And then we're just going to keep rolling out throughout this entire offseason. We're going to have player reviews for last year. We're going to have previews going into next year. We're going to be here all offseason, hopefully talking about some free agents moves here and there as well.
Yeah, the Soto signing episode is going to go crazy.
Absolutely crazy, crazy, crazy. Thank you all for joining us once again. We'll see you all off season. And for now, raise up.
Raise up.
Thank you for tuning into this presentation by RBLI Sports. On your way out of the stadium, please remember to like and subscribe.